Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service, with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. Hello, I'm Oliver Conway, and this edition is published in the early hours of Saturday, the 3rd of April. The US Capitol goes into lockdown after police are rammed by a car. The driver and one officer are dead. We hear from a doctor in Myanmar treating victims of the military crackdown. And the Netherlands becomes the latest country to pause the Oxford-AstraZeneca coronavirus vaccine. Also in the podcast...
I think there might be an element of like a cultural translation to be done here. Like if you're a Brit and you do something of any kind of renown that people regard well, then people start saying the B word.
Are we about to find out who will be the next James Bond? Less than 3 months after the US Congress was stormed by supporters of Donald Trump, the Capitol has again been the scene of violence. A man drove his car into two police officers before hitting a barricade. He then brandished a knife before being shot. Saqib al-Islam, a journalist, was outside the Capitol.
I saw a number of detectives running towards the Capitol. There was FBI and other agencies who were here. I saw a couple of ambulances as well coming out of the Capitol building. So at this point, we are total lockdown. We cannot get into any building.
The suspect was taken to hospital and later pronounced dead. CBS News named him as Noah R. Green from the state of Indiana. One of the officers also died. He's been named as William Billy Evans. Yogananda D. Pittman is the acting chief of the U.S. Capitol Police.
The suspect rammed his car into two of our officers and then hit the north barricade barrier. At such time, the suspect exited the vehicle with a knife in hand. Our officers then engaged that suspect. He did not respond to verbal commands. The suspect did start lunging toward U.S. Capitol Police officers, at which time U.S. Capitol Police officers fired upon the suspect.
Members of Congress were not in session at the time. Both the Senate and the House of Representatives are in recess for the Easter holiday. Last month, the authorities in Washington began to dismantle some of the security fencing and other measures put up after the storming of the Capitol on the 6th of January. I got the latest from Washington and our correspondent Larry Madowo.
So what we do know is this individual, a 25-year-old man, Noah Green, he's been identified, and we're starting to learn more about who this individual was. He's believed to be an African-American man who was a follower of the Nation of Islam and who appears from his social media posts to have a certain degree of paranoia, might have been suffering from some mental health problems.
Yeah, because initially, at least, the police said they didn't think it was terror-related. Is that still their assumption?
That is still the working theory, that this was an individual working alone. He was not on any watch lists maintained by any law enforcement agencies. He was not on their radar, essentially.
But coming less than 3 months after the Capitol was stormed, how has it been allowed to happen that a police officer is lying dead?
A second police officer died defending the Capitol today. The last officer, Brian Sicknick, died during the attack on the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. This will lead to a lot of head scratching about the security failings around the U.S. Capitol. It was heavily fortified and protected after the January 6th insurrection, around the inauguration and after. But much of that security and the fencing and the National Guardsmen has begun to come down. I was at the U.S. Capitol on Friday last week picking up my media badge, and there was only one barrier that I needed to go through. And this is the barrier that this individual breached and drove right into these two U.S. Capitol officers. So a lot of questions will happen. One of the proposals has been for permanent fencing around the U.S. Capitol complex. This is controversial. Americans are very proud of the fact that the seat of their government, the seat of their democracy, is open to people to walk in, to the citizens, to come in and take pictures and to meet their elected representatives, and they don't like the idea of locking it down.
Larry Madowo in Washington. Since the coup in Myanmar 2 months ago, the military there has killed 500 people, 40 of them children, according to human rights groups. Now, China, which has been slow to condemn the crackdown on protesters, has said it wants to see calm restored. A UN human rights official has said Myanmar is spiralling towards greater violence. Razia Iqbal has been speaking to Dr. Tur, who works at a hospital in the main city Yangon and who has seen the impact of the bloodshed.
I was working in the Yangon General Hospital previous days, and there have been a lot of patients are coming into the hospital with the gunshot wounds, and some got open fractures in the limbs, you know, the arms and legs, and some got the gunshot wound in the abdomen. And, you know, this is the very situations I've never seen before. Some got the shot in the neck and head, and they got died in the spot.
Do you know colleagues, doctors, medics, nurses who have been arrested inside hospitals?
There are not many doctors arrested in hospital, but the medics and doctors living in the clinics are getting lots of threatening, and they have to flee away to the other places. My friend, a doctor from Saigon, gave a recent information that they make an announcement to arrest all the medics in Saigon and also the Yangon rescue organizations, including the ambulances and the medics. That's why they are not dare to live in the township, and they have to flee and run away from the township. So none of the ambulances go out for no reason.
When people are brought into the hospital with injuries, they're just making their own way. There aren't any ambulances, or there are fewer ambulances.
Yes, because there are not so many ambulances, and they use their own vehicles, you know, like cars and motorcycles.
Are you nervous yourself for your own safety?
Yes, of course. Because they are threatening lots of medics. That's why I am afraid, afraid enough. Because I am going to the medical centers and clinics as well as the hospital. That's why. Because most of the ambulances don't go out, it also affects upon the non-injured patients. You know, some might get heart attack, and one of the patients I contacted recently, that is an abortion case. They want to go to the hospital, but none of the ambulances dare to go out.
But you will continue to work as a doctor, or will you try and leave Myanmar? Many people are trying to leave.
Yes, yes. Because we left Myanmar, we have to live in our country, in their bad situations. That's why I will keep treating patients, no matter how they threaten. The other medics and other doctors and nurses will do the same as me. They won't leave us. They won't leave the people. And they will continue to make a way to give the treatment to the patients.
Dr. Tur talking to Razia Iqbal from Yangon in Myanmar. The coup there has also raised tensions on Myanmar's northern border with Thailand, where the Karen tribe has long battled the military. Our Southeast Asia correspondent Jonathan Head has this report.
Snaking through the forested hills in front of me is the Great Salween River, which divides Myanmar from Thailand at this point. And just across I can see an isolated Burmese army post, just a few huts with the Burmese flag flying above them. Much of this territory, though, on the other side of the river, is still controlled, as it has been pretty much since Myanmar's independence more than 70 years ago, by the insurgent Karen National Union, the KNU. Now, that makes it ideal territory in many ways for a rival provisional government opposing the coup to establish itself. But any formal cooperation between the civilian opposition and the various ethnic armies that have been fighting in Myanmar for decades is going to be a lot more complicated and difficult.
Ethnic Karen people on the move through the forest. They're among thousands who fled from their villages after a series of bombing raids by Air Force jets. Some crossed over to Thailand, but were sent back, except for seven wounded by the bombs who were treated in hospital. When I was hit, I couldn't walk, said this woman. She believes her mother and father are still hiding in the forest. The world's oldest civil war has flared up again after the military coup. The Karen are being hammered by the Burmese military, in part because the KNU is giving more support to the anti-coup movement than any of the other dozen or so armed ethnic groups, offering shelter to activists and politicians fleeing repression in the cities. But the KNU's foreign affairs spokesman, Padoso Torni, speaking to me from somewhere close to the border, worries that they can't accommodate too many fugitives.
Right now, more than 2,000 people came to our area, and we're trying to build a safe zone or safe house for them in our area. From the humanitarian perspective, we do believe that this is the good things for us to do. This is a challenge for us to take care of their basic foods and the shelter.
But there is another issue holding back an alliance between the urban opposition and the ethnic armies, and that's the historic mistrust between the majority Bama population and the minorities.
We still need time to build trust, because we get a lot of lessons from our struggles. So we'll still need to be building that trust among us.
The protest movement, which emerged after the coup, is conscious of this trust deficit. Younger protesters in particular have publicly acknowledged on their posters the failure of previous generations of dissidents to champion the grievances of Myanmar's minority communities. Now the committee representing the parliamentarians ousted by the coup has published a new draft constitution promising to make Myanmar a truly federal country for the first time and, says spokesman Dr. Sasa, rebuilding that lost trust.
Our constitution that we have declared promises full protections for the rights of all ethnic organizations and ethnic nationalities in the country. I myself, ethnic Chin. That's why this federal union building becomes so important. Trust and relationship will be going from strength to strength.
So will Myanmar's anti-coup movement evolve into a truly nationwide effort to end the long decades of military dominance?
Our Southeast Asia correspondent Jonathan Head in Thailand. The UK medicines regulator says 7 people have died as a result of rare blood clotting events after getting the Oxford AstraZeneca coronavirus jab. There were a total of 30 cases overall out of 18 million doses. In the Netherlands, the vaccine has now been suspended for the under 60s after 5 reports of blood clots in women out of a total of 400,000 people who've had the jab. One of the women died. Rebecca Morell is our science correspondent.
A link between these rare blood clots and the AstraZeneca vaccine hasn't been proven, but the UK regulator is investigating. So these clots are unusual in that they're associated with low platelet levels, and platelets are a type of blood cell that normally cause bleeding, not clotting, and these clots can affect the brain too. So what needs to be unpicked is whether these are happening naturally or whether they're a really rare reaction to the AstraZeneca jab. The incidence is low, so 30 cases out of 18 million jabs. So that's about one event in every 600,000 AstraZeneca vaccines. And the UK regulator said there have been 2 cases of brain blood clots with the Pfizer vaccine too, but these don't have the low platelet counts associated with them, so they're slightly different. But these clots have caused some countries to actually restrict who they give the vaccine to. So today the Netherlands has announced that it's not going to be giving the AstraZeneca jab to people under the age of 60. Germany are doing the same thing too. But the UK is continuing with its vaccine rollout, and the UK regulator stresses, along with the European Medicines Agency and the World Health Organization, that the